and welcome to Formula for Success. I'm David Coulthard, and alongside me in the virtual world, as always, is my old sparring partner, Eddie Jordan.
Yes, David, that's me. You've got some big friend of both of ours there as a special guest today. So, David, you're in the prime seat here. Why don't you go ahead with Rob?
Right, I will indeed. Well, you've given away a little teaser there of the first name of the man who's joining us. He is an engineering legend. He's worked with Jordan. He got out of there as quickly as possible. He was at Williams. And of course, he became most famous at Ferrari, working alongside Felipe Massa. It is Rob Smedley. How are you, Rob?
Thank you very much for having me. What is that growl that EJ just did? Is that normal?
Yeah, that's part.
Is that standard for this podcast?
That's 100% standard. It's something that started at the beginning and... I don't know, it stayed there, so we might have to change it fairly soon. Rob, I want you to be kind to me. Don't say any nasty things about what I was like as a boss, because I was good to you. I dragged your ass off the Yorkshire moors. You hadn't got a job. You got nowhere to go. You were dead and buried. I gave you the chance to run a race car that actually won Grand Prix. Jesus, you should be on your knees night and day for this.
So the best part about this is that... So Eddie, like anybody from EJ's place who went on to have a career, and I don't count myself in that group, but there was a lot of good guys that come out of that place, I have to say. And he always used to pull us aside latterly and say, I fucking made you. And then I remember one day we were in the nefarious Amber Lounge, and I can't remember the city we were in. I was with one of our mutual mates called Sam Michael, and he pulled us aside and he gave us this nonsense again about, you know, I fucking made you. And Sam turned round in his Aussie drawl and went, no, Eddie, we made you. And I think that was probably, there's a little bit of truth in that, because you were very good at picking up young lads, and you had a really good knack in how much you paid them as well. But you know, it was a great race team. We did some good stuff there, and I learned a lot. And I still look back, and it is my fondest memories of working in a Formula One team. We had a lot of fun, but we were a good team as well.
I think that was some really nice words, EJ. You've silenced the Jordan. He's sitting there. He's not used to people actually giving him a compliment about that being some of your fondest memories. Well, look, before we sort of get into more detail on that, we're having this conversation ahead of the first Grand Prix in Bahrain. So by the time this is actually broadcast, we will know the outcome, and maybe we'll need to get you back on, Rob, to use your engineering mind to dissect why everything happened the way it did and who the heroes and who the losers were from that first Grand Prix. But it is a long season and it is a tough industry, Formula One. So I think just taking you back, what on earth got you drawn to the sport? What was your first big opportunity? Was it Eddie, as he's mentioned, dragging you off? He said the Yorkshire Moors. The question would be, what the hell was he doing on the Yorkshire Moors? So take us back and give us some insight to the journey. What's something that's going to be inspirational to young men and women out there at university who think, I can be an engineer in Formula One?
I mean, I wasn't actually on the Yorkshire Moors, funnily enough. I actually went to school in the northeast of England. And my dad used to watch Formula One back in the 80s, and I used to think it didn't look particularly exciting. And then he took me to Silverstone, and I was absolutely blown away by it. I just thought this was absolutely visceral. And I just decided that that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be an engineer in Formula One. I never had any kind of, you know, delusions or anything like that about being a driver, which I think some engineers actually do. But I was just all about these cars and the engineering. No, they do, don't they? I mean, you listen to them when we're talking. We all talk a good game, right, when we're looking at the squiggly lines. But I've been in a Formula One car a few times in the three-seater at Fiorano, and it's not my cup of tea. That's understating it. I was nearly sick. Felipe Massa drove me around, and Rubens as well. They drove me around, and it was just fucking awful. I mean, it was the most awful experience I've ever had in all my life. And we had this dead man's button, and I said, no, I don't want to do it. And it was when Rubens was leaving and going to Honda. And I said, if I release the button, will you stop? And he said, yeah, yeah, because there's a really annoying beep in my ear, because they used it for all like the Philip Morris guests and stuff like that. So there's like a dead man's button. So if you kind of, you know, if you held it down and when you released it, then it beeped in the driver's ears. Anyway, so I jumped in the car and I went, please don't like scare me, because, you know I talk a good game, but I'm not very brave. And he kind of shot out the garage at Fiorano, and halfway down the straight to turn one, I released it. And I was going, stop, stop, stop. And he continued to do three laps, and I could hear him manically laughing. And then we stopped, and I got out, and honestly, I was like punch drunk. And I went, what the fuck was that? I said, why did you do that? Why didn't you stop? I said, wasn't the beep annoying? And he went, no, because I got them to disconnect it, because I know what a pussy you are.
Oh, what a great experience.
Yeah. And then I did it a few more times and I never liked it. Anyway, so I've digressed. So I went to, so I ended up doing all the normal things. I went to school, went to university, got a half-decent education. And then I actually worked for a guy called Mike Pilbeam for a while, who is Kieran Pilbeam's dad, who works in Formula One now. And Mike had worked for the BRM team, and I learned a load of stuff off Mike about design and engineering and all the rest of it. And then very quickly after that, ended up at EJ's place. He dragged me off the Yorkshire Moors. I don't know what you were doing up on the Yorkshire Moors, not me, Eddie, but yeah. And it was just brilliant. It was such a good team. We were small and scrappy.
How was EJ as a boss?
Oh, lunatic. I mean, like off the charts, like mad. But I think that he gets, I mean, that's just his personality, right? You cannot hide behind that. But I think that when I look, I've got a lot of, I wish he wasn't on this podcast because I could say nice things about him, but I have such a huge amount of respect because now I've started businesses and a little bit older and been around the block, you realize what it must have been like to start a team back in the 90s with a couple of million quid. And I think that there was only people like Eddie could have ever like made it a success that they did. But it was, you know, it was just, I do have to say, like, massive like hats off, and the success that he made of Jordan, you know, along with Gary and all of the other ledgers that worked there. But it was such a good grounding for me because it was a small team. You could get stuck into everything. I remember, you know, that transitioning to that year 2000 when we had electronic gizmos and we rewrote all of the code, and there was probably four or five of us in the race engineering department, which is race engineering, vehicle dynamics, tire dynamics, everything, you know. And that where you have like 300 people now, there was about five of us and we did everything. And all of those guys actually have gone on to do really good stuff in Formula One. And we just had a lot of fun and won some races in a car that probably, you know, that 99 car. So I come in right at the back end of that. That was a really good car. And then won some races. When did we, what year did we win in Brazil, Eddie? Was that 2001 or 2003?
2003.
You're welcome, both of you, by the way, because I should have won that race.
Well, everybody should have done. We were the only car still on the track, I think.
I'm actually curious. I've never asked this of an engineer. I see race engineers as, you know, part your engineering degree and knowledge of the car and understanding of vehicle dynamics and how to exploit aero maps and all of that good stuff that must really, you know, turn you on. But you're also psychologists, aren't you? You know, you've got to understand your driver, and we're delicate flowers on occasion. Was that a surprise to you when you developed into that role, or did you just, you know, you're a very sort of salt of the earth type person, straight talker? Is that just your background, where a driver was a driver, you wanted to get the best out of them and give your best, and it didn't really matter whether they were buddies or not? How did you approach all that? And what would you say is the thing that sets apart the race engineers from other talented engineers within a Formula One organization?
To be a good race engineer, you have to... And it's changed a lot now, right? You know, I mean, there's a lot more people on the car and a lot more specialists, and you become a little bit more of a, you know, bit more of a manager. But I think at its heart, you have to have that really strong relationship with the driver. you've got all of these, like you talked about, you've got all of these things that you need to have first principle knowledge of. You know, you need to have, you know, all your maths and physics and all the rest of it, because that's what kind of how the car works. But then there's another bit that if you don't know how to get the best out of that, then you're missing 80% of really your performance. And that's the driver. I always had good relationships with the guys that I engineered. Some of them, you know, and as you go through your career, you go from being like the young guy who, you know, the driver kind of tolerates, to being the older, more paternal guy who the driver, I guess, in some way looks up to. And I don't know, I think that every driver that I've ever worked with has always been very different. They've always had different personalities in and out of the car. And really, it's up to the engineer to be able to get the best out of that. You know, the drivers are the drivers, right? They do what they do, and they have a very specific role in the team. And it's not up to the driver to kind of mold or meld his personality into that of the engineer. It has to be the other way around. So I think I was always very adaptable with all of the guys that I worked with, and had like a very honest and transparent and straight talking to the point of physical violence at times, not all the time. I mean, this wasn't a weekend by weekend thing, you know, relationship with the guys, because you've got to have, right? I mean, they're getting in the car, they're driving it at 200 mile an hour. You're looking for literally milliseconds of lap time. You've got to trust each other. You know, you've got to absolutely be able to pee in each other's pockets, because if you don't, you're never going to get the best out of that person. So yeah, I don't know. It's a strange one. I didn't think about it too much, to be honest. I just did it, and sometimes it worked, and most of the times it didn't.
Yeah, I've never actually peed in the pocket of my engineer. Maybe that was the one missing ingredient between winning a few races and actually challenging for a championship. Now, we couldn't have you on without mentioning that famous quote, which it's possibly the most famous engineer-driver quote in the sport, unless someone can think of something more. Whereas you very, very slowly and very deliberately went, Felipe... What was it? Was it Fernando? It's so famous, I can't remember. Fernando is quicker than you, which is a hard one to tell your driver. I do remember you referring to him as Felipe Baby as well, which I loved. I thought my engineer never called me Baby.
So at the beginning of our working relationship together, he was such a nervy little thing. Like, and anything that went wrong, he had to be like, you know, shouting down the radio about something, when you could have just kind of, you know, you could have expressed it with emotion, but there's no need to like go off the charts with emotion. So that was the Felipe baby was a bit like that. It was kind of in the politest possible terms, oh, shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? We've got a job to do here. Like, do we really need to be hearing about you and the white visor, clear visor he meant, because it was raining and he couldn't see. So that was that. And you see it a little bit now, like GP with Max. You know, he has a similar relationship, I think, where it's kind of like, yeah, Max, we're busy. You know what I mean? Like, I get like the emotion and I get you driving the car, but we're doing our bit as well. And that's when the best relationships are. I think that's two guys who have a really good relationship as well. The Fernando is faster than you, yeah, was a slightly... heavier moment for me and the team, if I think you remember it well. Yeah, and it has become, I often get sent T-shirts and mugs and stuff in the post with Fernando is faster than you. But yeah, that was an interesting Sunday afternoon and an interesting few days afterwards. But there you go.
We talk about Felipe there, lovely guy, you know, he's got so many friends within the paddock, and clearly the demons of the World Championship that wasn't are still running with him. As we know, he'd opened a, you know, some sort of investigation into whether the World Championship should have rested with him or not, given the outcome or knowledge of the Singapore race when Nelson Piquet Jr. crashed the car there. Where do you sit in all that? Are you very much, look, he did everything on that day to deserve a world title, pole position, drove beautifully, won the race? Or do you go, look, the racing gods have decided something else?
I think the racing gods have decided on something else, isn't it? I think, you know, I've said this before, everybody should have, you know, if Felipe wants to, you know, he's one of my best mates, and if he wants to pursue this whole thing, then everybody should be free to do what they want to do. My opinion of it is that, you know, I'm somebody anyway who never looks back. You know, I don't care about what happened yesterday. I'm interested in what's happening today, tomorrow, and how I can affect that. So, you know, Felipe's has been pretty clear that why he wants to do this. He wants to do it for justice, as he says, and he has the right to be able to pursue that. You know, good on him if that's what he wants to do. My view on it is that, you know, it would have been great to have won the World Championship, the 2008 World Championship in 2008. We didn't. You know, Lewis won it, and the guy with the most points at the end of the season is the guy who deserves to win it. However, those points are accrued, I think. That's racing. And some, you know what it's like. You two guys know better than me. You look into some points that you shouldn't have had, and you kind of get points nicked off you that you should have had as well. And I think that's the whole point why it's a, you know, 20 race, 25 race, whatever it is now, 24 race World Championship, because over the course of the season, it'll all even itself out. So there you go. I don't know how it'll finish. I watch that one from afar, if you like, and we'll see where it gets to.
Rob, I think you have to tell them what's just one thing about Jordan, and that is we had a motto, and I would always write everything. I would never sign my name EJ. I would write just FTB. And just for the avoidance of any doubt, do you remember what FTB was? And why don't you tell the listeners what I used to write at the bottom of every memo and every note to the team?
It was fuck the begrudges.
There you go. And just a little bit of notice. When you said Fernando is faster than you, I think we need to tell the viewers and the listeners that was your way of circumventing team orders, because there was a ban on team orders. We were not allowed to tell the drivers to... I mean, if you remember Spa, I had to tell Ralf Schumacher that he wasn't able to pass Damon Hill. And very soon after that, team orders came in play. And what you said to Fernando was a way of circumventing that rule. And a certain other thing that I wanted to talk to you about, which is a very nice, clear way you've said it, was the racing gods. Sometimes you win and you sometimes... So Lewis was very lucky, as we know, in against Massa in Sao Paulo that particular year where he won the championship. But then again, in Abu Dhabi, it went against him. So sometimes it plays to your favour and sometimes it plays against you. So that is the luck of the gods. And I really like the way that you've described it. They're the racing gods at play. And that will always continue as far as I was concerned. So talking about Lewis, and this is a question really that I'm intrigued about. He's leaving Mercedes and going to Ferrari. Will he like it there? Will it suit him? What are his biggest challenges there? And how do you think he would go about it? I know there's a whole lot of questions, but maybe you could answer them in terms of should he bring his own people there, just like what Michael did in the past? So is there something that you can advise him?
I think he'll love it there. He's a driver that needs the team to be very much behind him and supporting him. And I think he will love it. I think that the Tifosi, the Ferrari fans, they are unique in the world as to how passionate they are. You know, I mean, you've got Williams fans or Jordan fans or Mercedes fans, but they don't really reach that same level of passionate and almost fanatical obsession with the Ferrari team. The Ferrari team, when you're there, you feel like you're part of the national team. That's what it is, right? So you get, when you win, they treat you very nicely and you never have to pay in any restaurants, which you can imagine for me was my favorite part of the whole experience. But the reality is that when you don't do very well, they're also very clear with you about that you're not their favorite person. But I think when you win them over, as somebody like Michael Schumacher did, you are a god. And I think that that will give Lewis the little bit of motivation that perhaps he needs. And I think it will be a two-way reciprocal thing, because I think that Lewis can elevate the team that final few percent. And that's all it ever needs, right? I mean, if you look at Red Bull when it was struggling, or Mercedes when it was struggling, Ferrari, you know, just before we started to win all those championships, it just needs, it's got all the right ingredients. It just needs that final few percent to elevate it, which Lewis can do. You know, he can bring that final few percent to you know, just quicken everybody's pace just that tiny bit. That's all you need, and then and turn them into a winning machine. So, you know, he's going there, he wants to win his eighth world championship. He could actually, you know, don't shoot me, but it's fairly unlikely that he will go there as eight times world champion, but definitely it is a very good opportunity for him and for the team. Should Lewis bring people back there, should he take them there, sorry? I think you have to be a little bit careful with that game, because it's a game where either you are rebuilding from the ground up, which is what happened in the mid-90s in Ferrari, you know, when Michael Brough, Ross and Rory Byrne, that was a ground up building exercise. I'm not sure that Ferrari are actually there. Now, would he bring his engineer, Pete? He might do, you know, he needs, if he needs somebody that he feels close to, that, you know, somebody can translate what his language as a driver is into engineering, you know, that could work if Pete wants to do it. He might have his eye on other people, but I do think that you have to be a little bit careful with kind of following your driver about and then becoming, like, you know, part of the driver's team rather than part of the team. You know, the team is always the most important bit here. So, I don't know, let's see. Time and money will talk, I guess.
I see the sport at the moment and I'm a little bit lukewarm about some of the things that are happening. And I'd like to say to you, you've been out of it long enough, you've seen it at the top end. But, you know, for example, I'd like your opinion on no rookies, no new teams, the engines sounding like a bucket of crap as far as I'm concerned. And you know, the new technologies, it seems to be easier for the older drivers, and it's the no rookies that I have a real issue with. Just finally, before DC takes us out of here, could you please have your own opinion on those sort of things, please?
So I don't mind the sound of the engines, but I have somebody said to me, "Oh, you got to listen to this Bring Back V10s podcast," and it does take you back when I listen to all of that. And the sound of it, you know, the sound for me of when, you know, I mentioned when my dad took me to the first Grand Prix, and this whole fucking visceral wall of sound hit me as I walked into Silverstone, and I was like, "Oh my God, what is that?" With the old V10s and even V12s back then. And I think that is something that I miss. But, you know, again, you know, I'm a personality that doesn't want to look back. So I don't mind the sound of these hybrids. I think they sound pretty cool. The no rookie thing is just a travesty. We have good enough rookies, and it's just not great for the sport not to have them coming through. I think if you want to look more positively on that, I think we've got kids like Kimi Antonelli who will be coming through in a few years, who are great, great talents. There's some others just behind him, and we need that, right? You need the rookies. They should be the lifeblood of drivers always coming through. Your third question, Eddie, was about these cars being too easy for to drive. I think was that how it was framed. I think there is a little bit of that, but I think, you know, again, you still got to look at these drivers as warriors, as gladiators. You look what Max Verstappen can do with the car. The cars are different. The cars sound different. They are different to drive, but, you know, it's still a great sport. There's still some really, really great elements to it. So,
Rob, when they told me that you were going to be on the program, I said, "Oh, Jesus, do I still owe him money?" What's the story with Rob Smedley? Because he was always...
Yes.
No, that's not true. I don't owe you a dime. So the thing is that I was never know what people are going to come out and say. It could be very complimentary, as you have. I'm very impressed, by the way, with your memory bank that's able to come up with these things. But life is very short. And I'd say this to everyone out there. You must make sure that you get as much out of it as you can. And by that, I'm talking about, in your case, a bit of education, a bit of fun. But you must have a good balance and a good mix. Make sure you take all of the good things and realise how lucky we are to be in the position that we currently are.
I agree with that completely. I think that, you know, all three of us on this call, we haven't got much to moan about, right? But, you know, I think that we've all made our own luck as well, you know. DC, what did your boss, your old boss used to say? Ron, didn't he say that you make your own luck or there is no luck or something like that? He had some Ronism for it. But I think the reality is that we are particularly fortunate, right? There's a lot of right place, right time, but there's also getting hold of it and just doing the absolute best you can and having a bloody good time while you're doing it. Why not?
Well, hear, hear to that. I think that is a wonderful place for us to thank Rob for joining us. We could, I'm sure, continue to ramble on and share stories and have a great little sparring session. But I think for our listeners, it's probably about enough for today. So just remember to follow us on Formula for Success on Spotify and whenever you listen to your podcasts. And you can find us on social media with the handle at F1 for Success. Actually, Rob, are you on social media? Are you anything you need to ident?
I am rsmedley73. I've just joined Instagram. I did it to annoy my kids. So yeah, go on there and follow me because you'll annoy them even more.
Okay, I'm going to do that. EJ has just come on Instagram as well. So I've given EJ a follow. I'm going to go on rsmedley73, giving himself a shout out to the fact
73.
That that's the year you were born, I assume.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Indeed. I'm 71. Yeah, you can't hide from that one. All right, Rob, it's been an absolute pleasure. Straight talking, as always. I would love to, if we can, invite you back on after the start of the season and we can do just maybe a much shorter review of winners and losers, if that can fit in your busy diary.
I would love that. Yes, definitely. I will be in Saudi. Who's going to be in Saudi?
Me. So we could sit down in Saudi and we can get EJ on the line and we can do a quick sort of, you know, 20-minute wrap-up.
Let's do it.
Who's paying for you to go to Saudi then?
Can't remember now.
Exactly. Rob knows Eddie well enough to give him no information.
And who did you nick all those helmets behind you from? You've got all those helmets behind you. I doubt if you paid for any of those. So have you worked, you know, evaluation listing in there? Have you put any of them on insurance?
Do you remember that one?
That was the pit stop. It was great, and they were yellow, and we did a great video on that. Rob, honestly, you're recalling a lot of things in my mind that went on during those times, and that yellow, I'll never forget the day, and I think you were there when Johnny Lydon of the Pistols came to have his photograph taken, and he wanted a helmet like that on his head, and then he painted his head. He had his hair coloured the same thing. He took his tooth out and he wanted to look as evil as he possibly could be. He didn't have to work too hard on that, by the way, but anyway, he did look quite evil. Great memories. Rob, thanks for coming on. It's been absolutely a joy and a pleasure for me. You go well, brother. You look great.
Thanks, boys. See you soon.
Cheers. Thank you very much.